Hi, Royals fans. This is J.J. Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official health care provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get the major league care you deserve at kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and AP Katie with Jake Gutierrez. On this Tuesday, January 26, 2021, we're now joined by Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
I am doing good. How you guys doing?
I'm doing good. I saw you on TV interviewing Honey Badger Tyrann Mathieu after the game. You were in the stands shouting through your face mask at
as loud as
Honey
I could.
Badger. But you know what? He heard everything, so a job well done. So you talked to him after the game. So let's just start there with what you saw from Honey Badger and his defensive teammates in that win over the Buffalo Bills, especially the secondary. I mean, the coverage was sticky. I couldn't tell you how impressed I was with Thornhill and Honey Badger and Bashaud Breeland. I thought they were just terrific in holding Stephon Diggs well below his average as far as production and, creating some confusion, I thought, with Josh Allen.
Yeah, I think that was exactly what happened. And I think we spoke about this a little bit last week when we were talking about this matchup and just when you have a team that is so reluctant to run the football that it really puts a lot of pressure on Josh Allen because the Chiefs defense, they have their issues, but one thing they're not is a team that's not really good when they know what's coming. And so I think just knowing that once they got him in the situations where they knew he was going to throw, they tried to run the ball a little bit, but that was more sort of like just to show you we'll do it. But I think for the most part, they were really dialed into what the Bills wanted to do. They knew how to take away Stephon Diggs, and Cole Beasley did a little bit early, but he vanished. And there was no real answer for the Bills after that point. And so, yeah, I think that this was the game they've been waiting for all season long, or at least for the second half of the season when they'd had so many one-score games to have their offense play well and then have their defense step up and really choke out the Bills after that point. It was pretty impressive.
So we've been having a conversation with you going on a couple years now about the Chiefs' decision not to invest heavy resources at the cornerback position. And we've talked about you can't invest high draft picks and money everywhere on the field. The league just doesn't allow for it. So you almost have to pick, okay, where are we going to try to get by? And you talked about how teams like the Seattle was able to kind of do that with their secondary for a while because they got guys that fit their scheme. Is that, can we say now that that's what they've done here with guys like Snead and Ward and Breeland, that they've got guys that fit their scheme? How do they do it?
Well, they do it because they have a great offense. And so you're usually, they create the situations that they had, that offense creates the situation that they had on Sunday against the Bills, where once you're playing from ahead, the playbook gets really limited on the other side. Right, so you know they got to throw the football. You know you can dial up your pass rush. You know you can dial up your blitz. You're not playing on your heels. And so really the only way to – it's twofold. I think if you're going to be able to beat the Chiefs, and you go back to the Raiders game or teams that have played them tough, you got to find a way to get to those corners. And a lot of ways, Tyrann Mathieu helps out a lot. Like they're able to disguise a lot of stuff. He's able to move around and – pop into places. And so when you're playing quarterback, your reads post-snap against this team are a little more difficult because you don't know where he's going to be at. When they play a team with the Raiders, when you have speed, they can get down the field and they're willing to throw it and you have a running back who can run it, you can't be as cavalier about things, which is why this matchup is going to be really interesting because now you have, again, a team with really good receivers. But I think the Buccaneers realize after the first game they have to be more committed to running the football if they want to really play good offense or at least high-level offense. And so, yeah, I think Ward and Breeland are serviceable. Nobody who watches football is going to tell you those guys are great players. Snead's a good player. He's been a revelation. But they also – the scheme they play allows them to protect those guys. Same thing with the linebackers.
Okay, so there's so many storylines here with this Super Bowl besides the obvious of Mahomes versus Brady. But, you know, after the Chiefs lost to the Patriots in the AFC Championship game, I think everyone wanted the Chiefs to get another crack at the Patriots to get revenge. Couldn't do that. They beat them in the regular season last year, beat them in the regular season this year. But now Mahomes gets another crack at Brady in the Super Bowl, which that was impossible a couple of years ago. But Brady gets another crack at Steve Spagnuolo as a defensive coordinator, which is interesting because Steve Spagnuolo that's what his reputation and resume has been built upon, what he did to Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. And so if you're Steve Spagnuolo, based on what they have, what the weapons that he has on his defense, how do you anticipate the Chiefs' defense to try to slow down the Bucs' offense?
Oh, they're going to have to pressure. They're going to have to blitz, unless Chris Jones or Frank Clark have monster games, which we just haven't seen that all season long. You know, they're going to have to dial up a lot of blitzing, which is what they did the first time they played him. And they had pretty good success they forced two interceptions doing it. But I just, when those Giants teams were playing the Patriots teams, they had a lot of pass rushers. So it wasn't just Michael Strahan. They had O.C. Umenyura and Justin Tuck. And I think Jason Pierre-Paul was on those teams, if I remember correctly. I think the second one. Am I wrong?
That sounds right.
Was he a rookie? I think he might have been. But that was like 2011. So they had a lot more. The Chiefs only have two real pass rushers. And so once you get past those two guys, it's harder. So I think they're going to have to do a lot more blitzing. And they're going to have to try to create the kind of confusion that you saw in Josh Allen or Baker Mayfield. A lot harder with a guy like Tom Brady because he's seen so much stuff. And he's seen them now. He was on the second one? Okay, yeah, so he was on the 2011 team. So
he had 4.5 sacks that year.
Yeah, and so he was. And
like you said, Tom Brady now, but the difference is, and look, Brady, when he's on, sometimes you can't get to him because he gets rid of the ball so fast. But one thing that they don't have to worry about, like they did with Baker Mayfield and like they did in this last game with Josh Allen, Brady's not going to get out of the pocket.
Run.
Brady's
not
going to beat you with his legs. So It's a different challenge, but that's one variable that they don't have to worry about because it seems like, especially now with the way the NFL's going, you always have to worry about the quarterback hurting you with his legs. That is erased when you go up against Brady.
Yeah, but you go back and look at their games, the three games they played in the playoffs, he's been pretty clean. I don't know what the numbers are as far as total sacks, but Redskins' defensive line is pretty good. They didn't really give him a lot of problems. Saints' D-line pretty good. They didn't give him a lot of problems. Green Bay's got a lot of pass rushers. They didn't give him a lot of problems. And so that's – they've done some things. And I think what they've done since the Chiefs played them – that Chiefs game was a big turning point for the Bucs. Obviously, they got down early and ended up being a close game. But I think they realized at that game that they can't keep playing offense the way they were playing offense. They got to be more consistent running the football. They have to – better define the roles of the guys within the offense, and they have to allow Brady to do more things like he did in New England, which is having more motion, more play action, more options, short and intermediate routes, and I think that's where you've seen their transition into this team that's been averaging, 36, 37 points a game over the last 3 weeks. They've got – now, if Antonio Brown plays in this game, I think that's a huge boost to their offense. I don't know where he is, but if you look at his numbers over the last, 6-7 games that he's played, he's been pretty impressive too. So what I see is an offense that says, okay, if we're going to throw it deep, we'll go to Evans, we'll go to Scotty Miller, probably AB. If we're throwing intermediate, we're going to Chris Godwin, we're going to go to Cameron Brate. If we're going to the red zone, we're going to Gronk, we're going to Evans. And then we're going to run Fournette, and we're going to run Jones, we're going to have a more consistent approach with those guys. And so that's what I see. Like when they played the Chiefs the first time around, it was like they just seemed discombobulated. And it wasn't just that game. I think you go back the previous 3 or 4 games they played, there was a lot of that going on. And so they just seem more comfortable with what everybody's doing in that offense now.
and I know that the pass rush didn't get home with the Packers. They only had one sack. It looked, you know, and they hit him, you know, a few times. But we do. It gets lost in the discussion because they won the game. But we do need to recognize that the offense and Tom Brady was garbage in the second half.
Oh yeah.
I mean terrible. So why? What went wrong for them in that second half? Because they had multiple chances for the offense to put the game away, and they couldn't do it in the second half.
Yeah, well, I mean, they had tip ball went to an interception. He threw a couple balls up that looked like miscommunication with Mike Evans.
One of them, it was because Fournette went the wrong way.
Missed the block, yeah.
You know, missed the block.
Yeah, and so
that pass right down the middle that was tipped, that he had him wide open.
Yeah, he missed him,
and he missed it. He just overthrew it.
Yeah. That's going to happen. I mean, I think they won that game because of their defense. That's really the bigger story to me. It's not. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about the quarterbacks for the next 2 weeks, but for me, the bigger story is how their defense has come to life and how they've gotten a better play from Shaq Barrett and Pierre Paul. And when you're sacking Aaron Rodgers five times in that game, that's a huge boost to your team's effort. So I think that it wasn't just I'm not trying to say Tom Brady like dominated the game by any stretch of the imagination, but I think what I saw was a team that has come together, and everybody's saying we got to do our part to win games here. I mean, it's the biggest storyline in this game to me is Eric Fisher not playing. I mean, I think this game is going to come down to what happens in the trenches.
Okay, but that's been people keep saying that. But the Chiefs have lost like every offensive lineman they have this year, and they still led the league in yards. They lost Eric Fisher in this last game, and they drove right down the field and scored a touchdown.
That was the end of the game, wasn't it?
I mean, it was. I can't remember if it was third or fourth quarter, but the point is, like, they still did it. You know, I mean,
let me ask you this: how do you feel about going out to play a team with a really good pass rush without Eric Fisher or Mitchell Schwartz playing offensive tackle?
I mean, I feel worse.
Yeah.
I feel
That's
worse. But I also like.
Now, can they do it?
They could
do it
for a whole season. Yeah. They could do it for a game.
Yeah. I'm not saying they can't do it, but I'm just saying it's a big factor in this game.
Sure.
It changes the whole math for the Bucs and how they play defense.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it changes the way Andy Reid calls the game.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I definitely agree with that. But I also like, I guess those people that have wanted to say all along that, you know, offensive line play is overrated in the NFL and it's really about having a quarterback and two tremendous playmakers, all they have to do is point at the Chiefs this year and go, see, this shows you right here that all this talk about how you got to win in the trenches is overrated because the Chiefs had the best offense in the NFL and they lost everybody on their offensive line this year.
Well, again, I think they've had Eric Fisher all season long until today, right? Or until 2 days ago. And so when you have one really good tackle that allows you to shift some things, to move some things around. They do a pretty good job. Andy Hecht, their offensive line coach, does a really good job of mixing and matching players and finding ways to get by. But if you're telling me they're going to stick Stefan Wisniewski out there at right tackle and that Mike Remmers playing left tackle and they're going to consistently shut down Shaq Barrett and Jason Pierre-Paul, I don't see that happening. Like, I think
that'd be Wiley at right tackle.
Or Riley at right tackle. So, but you're going to have to think about keeping a back end to protect. You're going to have to thinking about sending fewer guys out into pass patterns, and it just changes the equilibrium. Now, can they win the game doing that? Yeah, I think they can do it. But I also feel like it's a huge loss. You can't underscore what it means to not have him. Think about this. Well, they lost four games last year. All four games came when Eric Fisher wasn't playing, right? You go back to the
last two seasons are 27-1 with him, 4-5 without him.
Yeah, and so you go back to the Super Bowl, the 3rd and 15 play, when Mahomes is drifting back and trying to hit Tyreek Hill, Eric Fisher is the guy blocking Nick Bosa on that play. Now, there's people in San Francisco who think he was holding, but end of the day, he made the block.
Good, I'm glad he did.
He made the block, but he made the block.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's all I'm saying. Those plays decide what wins championships, and so you don't have a great player there. And he's been a Pro Bowl player. It's a factor.
I'm with you. But I think just 2 weeks to prepare, one game, I think they can get it done. And shockingly, Jeff, I think they're going to beat the Bucks and win another championship.
You're going to go on the limb. Yeah,
that's right.
You know what? I would say this: if Fisher was healthy, I would have a harder time picking the Bucks in this game. Like, I feel like him not being there makes the Bucks an easier pick for a lot of people.
Well, a lot of people are going to be wrong then. But you going back to what you said about the Bucks defense, you know, that's really the reason they won the game, especially the second half. I think we do have to give an assist to the Packers coaching staff. Because if we were going to crush Greg Williams for what that defense was out there with the Jets in that Raiders game that was a debacle, what the hell was that before halftime between the Packers and the Bucks? What was that?
It happens, right? You it's situational football. You're that corner out there, Kenny Kane. You got to know they only got one option here. They're throwing the ball to the end zone. And clearly he was playing zone, so he's trying to feel the guy, and he lost track of him. And next thing you know, that maybe he underestimated Scotty Miller's speed. You know, sometimes with guys who were that fast, and you saw this with the Bucks game the first time around, I think they didn't realize how fast Tyreek Hill was until he was on top of him. And Scotty Miller's a 4.3 guy, 4.3 40. And so clearly the Bucks saw something that they liked. They drew it up. They saw the opportunity, and they were going after him all game long. Which, you know, the earlier point we're talking about the defense, I guarantee you that 35 and 49 are going to be weighing heavily on the minds of the Bucks, you know, going into this game, because I think they wanted to exploit a weakness in the Packers defense, and they saw that guy all – every time they saw an opportunity to go after that guy, they went after
him. Yeah, they did.
And so that was just one of those magical moments where, like when the Ravens played the Chiefs and they hit that, you know, really long touchdown pass to Mecole Hardman and baited – Marcus Peters. I mean, you get those plays sometimes, you know?
Well, you're right about the Tyreek Hill thing, because they decided to try to defend him like one-on-one, and he changed the scoreboard like every time he touched the ball in the first quarter. It was, and to me, that's like as tremendous as Travis Kelce is, best tight end in the history of the game. All that, like, Tyreek Hill is the guy that if you don't account for him, the scoreboard changes on that play. And there's no way they're going to come with the same approach defensively to Tyreek Hill this time around they did last time.
That's why I'm saying Eric Fisher's injury becomes so significant, because now if you're Todd Bowles, your defensive playbook becomes a lot bigger. And you can be a little more cavalier with your corners as far as pressing guys. I guarantee you they're going to try to get home with four and see how it works before they start blitzing. And Bowles likes to blitz, but if they're getting home with four – and the Chiefs have to start keeping a back end, well, now you got four guys going the routes and you've got seven guys playing defense. Now you can double Hill. Now you can double Kelce. I've said this all season long. It's like, and Bill Belichick's the only guy who consistently does this, where he says, look, I'm not going to let Tyreek Hill kill me. I'm not going to let Travis Kelce kill me. And the numbers those guys have in those games are reflective of that. Like, you just, and I think, you know, Steven is.
What about the Bills' approach where they let both of them kill them? Is that not good? Yeah. Or
questionable.
No?
Yeah. Nine catches in the first half. It's like, man, it's like, this guy's pretty good tight end. You might want to guard him.
So why he had 13 catches! He had 13! That's the championship right. game record!
On the drive.
But they shut down Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Well, they did.
Right.
Yards. On the drive, that Fisher got hurt. When Kelce caught that touchdown pass, he was so wide open that Patrick Mahomes threw it like 15 yards into the air.
Yeah, they dialed it up. I mean, it was a great call. Sometimes you get those plays. But yeah, I definitely think you're going to see Tyreek Hill not having the kind of day that he had last time around. They're going to devote two defenders to him. I guarantee you they'll probably devote two defenders to Travis Kelce, depending on where they're at in the field. Maybe they'll double both guys. Maybe closer in the red zone, you double Kelce and you let Hill try to – he's not really a factor in the red zone. But yeah, I seriously doubt that this game's going to be what Buffalo did. That'd be lunacy.
They can't playoff Sammy Watkins back in my life. Yeah. Playoff Sammy, where are you? Come back. We have Jeff Chedilla in studio. Jeff, we're gonna get Nate all wound up in the next segment. How's
oh boy.
That sound?
Okay.
All right.
He already seemed like
wound up. We're gonna get him wound up about analytics and football.
Yeah, let's go.
Nate's gonna have at it ball. Coming up. Oh boy. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We have our friend Jeff Chedilla from NFL Network and NFL.com. All right, fellas, I want to play a soundbite for you from Charles Davis, CBS sports analyst, and he was on ESPN radio having the discussion about Matt LaFleur kicking the field goal instead of giving Aaron Rodgers. And Jake, what was it, the greatest red zone offense in history?
That's correct. The highest percentage, touchdown percentage in the red zone. So they had 60 trips to the red zone. 48 of those trips were touchdowns, successful touchdowns. I'm not talking about scoring plays. I'm talking about touchdown percentage.
80%.
So they had 60
and a Hall
trips.
Of Fame, yeah. Hall of Fame quarterback, the best wide receiver as far as scoring touchdowns. And so he felt it the right move to not give Aaron Rodgers one more crack at that and ultimately a chance to tie the game. They kicked the field goal and decided they'd give the ball back to Tom Brady and hope they get it back, which they didn't. And we can talk about that later. But this has brought up a conversation about analytics and about what coaches are doing on fourth down. And look, I don't know how this relates to analytics. All I know is I've watched Mike Vrabel and Mike Tomlin decide to punt in crucial situations when I think they should have gone for it. I saw Sean McDermott just happy as hell to go out there and kick field goals on fourth and short inside the 10-yard line, thinking that was going to beat the Chiefs. And then we see what Matt LaFleur did, and the one guy that has shown that he has the balls in the postseason is Andy Reid, even if Chad Henne's in the game. So Big Red, Big Balls, whatever, both nicknames stick. And so let's hear
Big Red Balls
from Charles. I don't know about that. Charles Davis, he was talking about analytics, and he kind of sounded like Nate, too, when he was talking about this. But I want to get to you guys' reaction to everything that I talked about and what Charles Davis has to say here.
I need to take the analytics 101, 102, 103 courses this summer to be better prepared for next year. But I also think that coaches might need a hard reset on analytics. Because in the old days, we used to hide behind, the book says punt on fourth down. The book says, right? And people started saying, oh, the heck with the book, the analytics say. Well, do the analytics really say go for it on fourth and four after you've lost 3 yards on a run? Do the analytics really say before we get into the fourth quarter that we need to go for two and chase points and now we change the math? See, because remember, they kicked the extra point there. We're not changing. The math may change a little bit better for Matt LaFleur when he decided to kick the field goal. See, when he kicked the field goal, the math didn't change. He still needed a touchdown. So I didn't understand that part.
Nate Bucati, this is a pet project of yours. Your thoughts on what Charles Davis had to say and how it relates to what we've seen in the postseason.
The problem with analytics is that people use it as a crutch and people use it as a definitive yes or no answer to things. And they make too many absolute statements based off of analytics as if they're just indisputable fact. And so it becomes a crutch as well. I guess the analytics community, and that also, it also implies that the analytics community agrees on everything. As if there's only one set of numbers to evaluate everything on. I've seen people in the analytics community say that he made the right call by kicking the field goal there. But I also think that a coach should be informed of the analytics. He should have somebody like Andy Reid does in his ear saying, hey, this is what we're showing with the numbers right now. But he also has to have a feel for the game and who's on the other sideline and how the game is going. That's my opinion. Jeff, where do you come down?
I'm not as... what's the right word? Not as vitriolic, not as hateful about analytics as you seem to be. But they have a place. I mean, I have a lot of respect for guys who do it and know guys who do it. My issue with it is I partially.
They do have a place. Let's get that. It is important,
yeah.
Jeff.
Yeah.
And it does. But I think there needs to be a better marriage between the two.
Well, what
yes,
you often
that,
find,
that's
what you
exactly
often find,
what
a lot of
say.
Guys who do analytics didn't play football or didn't play at a high enough level. It's like it's easy to look at a spreadsheet or run a program and say this is what you should do and what's going to happen, but you're talking about human beings and you're talking about emotions and energy and things that have nothing to do with analytics. And so I agree with you. I I've seen a number of coaches make, I don't want to call it a mistake, but it's a baffling call within the scheme of a game, the flow of a game. I thought that in the Buffalo game, that McDermott's decisions twice to kick field goals on fourth and short, when you have a mobile quarterback who needs to create some momentum, you see this game slipping away from you, the Chiefs, you're not stopping the Chiefs. Crazy not to do that. You saw it with that situation with LaFleur, and I get the idea you want to have four timeouts, you know, with the two-minute warning, and fourth and nine is a whole different situation than a fourth and three. But, again, you've got an MVP quarterback. You're in a situation where you have to make a play. I'm going for a touchdown there.
How much,
the math.
How much do you put on Aaron Rodgers for not flexing his power in that moment, right? And going over the coach and saying, we got to go for it, and pushing him to the limit, almost to the point where I'm going to throw a fit if you don't go for it, and then I'm going to look right at the end. Because if he would have put that kind of pressure on LaFleur, I feel like LaFleur would have crumbled, but he didn't. He kind of walked off the field and pouted, and then pouted afterwards.
Yeah, but you don't know if he was upset about not running, if he saw the replay, if his head might have been in a different space at that point.
I mean, it's got to be, but you can't be in a different space if you're the MVP of the league and look. His press conference after that loss was different than I've seen Aaron Rodgers ever look.
Yeah, well, he also had a lot of fun this year too.
Hey, look, all that fun is not what he was thinking about after that game. I mean, for me, it's like if you're a Hall of Fame guy, if you are the guy, right? We're talking about him as one of the top five.
He's
all
MVP
time.
This year.
You think Michael Jordan? If
he wants the opportunity, I get it.
Yeah. If Phil Jackson draws up a play at the end of the game and Michael Jordan isn't shooting the ball, you think Michael Jordan's going to stand for that? My guess is no.
Well, that was actually
Scottie
one of the
Pippen
things.
Scottie Pippen would take himself out of the game.
Well, yeah, Scottie Pippen did take himself out of the game. Actually, that was one of the things they talked about in The Last Dance, though, was one of the NBA Finals games where he literally drew up a play for Paxson, right? Yeah. And Jordan went out and executed it, you know, and passed the ball to Paxson. So I don't know. But go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that the thing about Andy, where he's at now, you talk about big balls, it's more like old balls. Because you go back to where he was.
Old big balls,
you know,
all of
15,
it.
20 years ago, he took a lot of flack for how he managed games, and we all
old
know the history there. And he wasn't, I can guarantee you, because I watched a lot of the games back then, he was not nearly as brave in those situations to go for it. And so some of that has to do with the quarterback you have, but I think, you know, the point you guys are all making is that, and I think the commonality here, these are all younger coaches. You know, Vrabel, Stefanski, McDermott, LaFleur, these are all young guys who have grown up with this way of thinking and looking at things and, you know, systematically, you know, processing it in your mind.
Great
looking
point.
At the analytics. Once you've been around and you've lost some games like Andy Reid has, you become a lot more. And Bill Cowher was the same way when he won his Super Bowl. He became a lot less conservative when he realized, okay, I only have a few more chances to win this thing. So I better, like, throw caution to the wind and just go out there and make it happen.
Well, I think also there's just so many factors. My point, I sound like I don't hate analytics. My point is, I said every coach should have an analytics guy in his ear that's at least giving him the information. But he shouldn't use that information as a crutch, as if that just takes him off the hook for making the hard decisions that a coach has to make. And another factor, like we go back to the one with Chad Henne, they had a play they liked. You know, sometimes a coach might be like, man, I don't have a play I like on 4th and 8 right now, and I don't feel good about it. And rather than call a play I don't feel good about, we're going to do this. And I'm not saying that makes it the right call, but those are some of the things that go into the decision-making process.
Well, my other issue with analytics is that it's always easy to say you did the wrong thing after the play's been run, right? There's no way of knowing that if the analytics say do this, that it's going to work out. Yeah, your percentages may be higher, but it doesn't guarantee you it's going to work out. It's like it drives me crazy. All the guys before the draft are telling you where this guy should be, what he's going to become, how he's going to be a Pro Bowl player or a franchise player, and then you never hear those guys a year later say, "Oh, I was wrong about that. I missed it." It's like it's always easier to be on the front side of making decisions than on the back end of it. So, but yeah, I am more of a proponent of emotions, momentum, feel. That stuff should matter as much as what a computer tells you to do.
Jake, let me hear the second Lewis Riddick clip that we have, and then we'll close the book on this topic. Because Lewis Riddick was asked this question, and he said that you got to sink or swim with Rodgers on fourth down.
When you take it out of his hands, and try to put it in the hands of the defense that had been struggling all year and trying to just manage your way to a win. And I understand why Matt did that, considering he felt as though, look, we have three timeouts, we have the two-minute warning, so that in essence is four timeouts, we get a stop, we get the ball back. But they still had this, they would still be down five and had to score a touchdown. So why not take your shot at it then? If you don't make it, you still have your timeouts. You still have to get a stop. You have another crack at it. If you don't get the ball back, you don't have any other cracks at it, and you just lose. So I didn't understand that at all, especially considering who he had at quarterback. It wasn't like you had some first-year journeyman quarterback pulling the trigger. You have a guy who everybody all year long said he's supposed to be the MVP. He's going to win the MVP. He's running away with it. Then sink or swim with him.
I agree with Lewis Riddick.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like LaFleur was pretty much saying that after the game, just as – McDermott was saying that after the Chiefs game, that, you know, looking back, I wish I could have made a different call there. And, you know, it's, as Lewis just laid it out, like, the thing I didn't like about it was, even if you don't make it there, you still have them deep in your own territory. You give your defense a better chance to get a stop. It's, I don't know, we've gotten to the place with analytics where it's gospel in some cases.
Yes.
And that's not where it should be, because football is not a game that's built on that. It's built on way more than that.
To get quite literal on that, the gospel is the word of God, so to speak. How many different religions are there based off of the gospels? Mm-hmm. There are thousands of different Christian religions based on that, because people read it and have different interpretations. And in analytics, people act like that too. Like there are different interpretations based on numbers, because there's a billion different numbers you can look at too. So yeah, I think coaches used to, they said, well, they're coaching for the press conference by doing the conservative thing. Now, analytics has become so widespread that really it's like you can just fall back on, well, the analytics told us to do this, and that's almost coaching to the press conference now.
What I laugh about is, you know, you hear Andy talk a lot after some of these, you know, really courageous calls. Not courageous anymore, it's who they are. They're going to go forward and forth in manageable situations most times. But he's always talking about the plays they're going over the night before and what they like and what they've discussed. We talked about this last week, all the input. And some of these coaches, like, you just got to this point. Now you're worried about what you're going to do? You have something lined up. How can you not have a play you don't like for these situations?
Right.
You know,
right.
It's how could you not think we might be in a point in the game where we have to create something for ourselves?
Yeah.
And I know that they have those conversations, but it just what Andy has shown in these playoffs – he's outcoached both the two guys, younger guys he went up against, is that, you know, experience matters. Having faith in your players matter. Just having conviction, just believing that, you know, we have people who can make this happen. Because when you convert those kind of things, it just changes the whole flow of the game. It changes the momentum. And if the Packers had scored a touchdown in that situation, yeah, I think their odds of getting a two-point conversion, tying it up, and maybe winning in overtime would have been much higher than where they were after it, because you felt like they just deflated it. Mm-hmm. And I get that they had a holding call, and they thought they got screwed on that one with Deontay Johnson and whatever, but it's like, as Lewis said, your defense wasn't stopping him for most of the game. And that guy in particular, Kenny King, was a liability for you.
We've got Jeff Chedia in studio. One more segment after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right. Let me have the song with the drops. Make some magic for Jeff Chedia. Jeff! Jeff! Former Chiefs and Browns GM John Dorsey is joining the Detroit Lions as a senior personnel executive. Jeff, is this what you've been waiting your whole life for? Does this give you optimism about
your who knows?
Beloved Detroit Lions? You've seen Dorsey's fingerprints on the Chiefs roster and the Cleveland Browns roster.
Who knows?
Detroit Lions next?
Who knows?
To have Dorsey lead them into the postseason.
I feel like they will get players, they will get talent. Now, how that factors into taking out kneecaps.
They'll be biting kneecaps all over the place,
who
man.
Who knows?
That's right. I don't know how that's going to work out. Who's going to coach
him? There'll be some extravagant contracts handed out. We know that, but, I think. We got to get our guy Dan Campbell. Don't forget about that job. We got to play that for Jeff as well. There's so much going on, stealing the spotlight from the Chiefs and the Bucks. He's not the GM, but you got to be happy with that, right?
I think he will help them get more players. I do think that. The coach is.
We're going to kick you in the teeth. All right. And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off. All right. Yeah. And we're going to stand up. And then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down.
Oh.
All right. And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap. And we're going to get up, and then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing. All right? That's going to be the mentality.
You know what I want? I want the guy who says, you know what, we're just going to knock somebody out. It's like, give me a one quick sentence. Too much getting knocked down there. Talk about knocking somebody out.
He said it's going to take two shots to knock him down. I remember, Jake, correct me if I'm wrong, back in the 2014 postseason, it took around seven shots to knock Jake down, but he didn't get back up, and eventually...
Well, there was a Dan E. Campbell that only took one shot to knock me down here. Title boxing.
That's the guy
exactly
I want.
Right.
I want Danny Campbell, not Dan
Do you,
Campbell.
So
nobody taught me to go for his kneecaps.
Danny
next
Campbell
time
knocked
I know.
Him clear, man.
He knocked me clear for a week.
As the Lions, you are not Jeff Chedia, the journalist, right now. You're Jeff Chedia, Lions fan.
Who knows?
When you hear those words from Dan Campbell, you're like, all right, let's start the season. Or are you like, oh, no.
See, it's always better to be anything but a Lions fan. So being Jeff Chedia the journalist is a much safer space to be in. at least I can actually listen to that.
Come
and try
on.
To be objective. Yeah. Like, you know, the Lions fan.
What I could have, should have, would have, who knows?
Between Dorse and Dan Campbell, there's going to be a lot of fun conversations.
We're not
going
even winning the press
hallways.
Conferences. We're not even going to win the press conferences. At least you could do that.
Can you imagine? They can start talking about magnets and all kinds of crazy stuff. That'd be fantastic.
Some closed captioning for those conversations.
There's worse guys you want in the war room when you're drafting a quarterback. I'm just saying.
They will get players.
Right. They're going to trade Stafford.
I don't know.
They're going to trade Stafford and they're going to draft a quarterback. That's one guy I'd want in my corner.
Here's my vote. That's my vote for Hard Knocks this year.
Yes.
I want Hard Knocks with the Detroit Lions, and the ratings in my household will be sky high. Okay, so Jake just brought it up. Matt Stafford plays where next year?
Oh, I'm going to say he's either going to be he can't be in Chicago because it's inside the division.
San Francisco.
I think San Francisco, Colts, or Washington. One of those
Aaron Rodgers plays where next year?
I think he's – well, you know what? If we're going to do it that way, I will put Stafford in Washington. I will put Rodgers in San Francisco.
Do you think there's a real chance of Rodgers leaving Green Bay, though?
It depends on how he plays it.
It's going to cost him a lot of money.
How about a year where we just went through Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, all these guys, and now we might have Matthew Stafford,
Think about what he just said.
What's that?
The first thing you said was a cap. You're talking about trading one of the five best quarterbacks of all time, but that's a normal response. It's like, the cap hits huge. Like you're getting rid of one of the Hall of Famers, one of the greatest ever, and he's still got about 3 or 4 years good years left.
Yeah. You know what's crazy about this?
It's insane.
I was in Green Bay when Favre left and Rodgers came in, and just the drama of all that. I thought I would never see this happen again.
Aaron Rodgers waiting though, do they?
Well, they didn't think they had Aaron Rodgers when he showed up, so maybe Jordan Love becomes this guy.
Yeah, we don't. We but don't still, know. It's
okay. Where does Deshaun Watson play next year?
I think he is in Chicago.
What?
Wow.
You know what? If you're Chicago, and I said this a couple weeks ago, you do whatever you can. I mean, whatever. Because you've been living under that dark cloud, and you can go back in time and correct one of the worst mistakes that franchise has ever made, and he's still only 25 years old.
And even if it doesn't work out, even if he's not successful, you are making it something right. Like, you won't have that held over your head, like Steven just said. Like, that, there's, I'd give him 4 first-round draft picks if they needed it.
Whatever it takes.
Yep.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Hey.
4 of them.
I like this. This is going to be wild. Damn.
God, Houston. Poof.
Who will the quarterback for the New England Patriots be?
Not Cam Newton.
Stafford could end up there.
Stafford could end up there. He could. Stafford could be there. Carson Wentz, I don't know what's going to happen with that.
That was my next guy. Who's
didn't
he gonna
didn't
play
they
for?
Just choose Wentz over
kind of with that hire.
With that hire, yeah, and that fire.
That's true.
Yeah, but then the report came out the other day that Wentz is still mad and doesn't feel like he has a good relationship with the front office, so he still wants to go.
Yeah. That felt more like Howie Roseman trying to make sure he's got somebody in. It's like a John Dorsey, Freddie Kitchens type move. Hmm. Have somebody in there who's going to be beholden to
me.
Well,
that worked out well.
Well, I mean, look.
Well, like Jake brought this up 2 weeks ago about Howie Roseman. How can he still have a job?
I have no idea.
What's going on there?
I have no idea. It is incredible. Yeah,
just destroyed
the whole
roster.
The quarterback for the Saints?
Jameis Winston.
That's an easy one.
Jameis Winston. Good. I don't think Taysom Hill's a franchise quarterback, and I think a year with Peyton can get Winston. You know, I don't think it's a long-term deal, but I think there's going to be some, at least give it a year and see what happens.
That's a super high return on entertainment investment. You watch that? Yep. I mean, that could be, that's a must-watch every week. I mean, he's got weapons, but all hell's going to break loose.
And he's cheap.
Right?
So, but I think Carson Wentz, if he leaves Philadelphia, he goes to the Colts. Gets back with Frank Wright. Is there anybody else we're missing here? Is Tom Brady going to be in Tampa Bay next year?
He's played until he's 45. He's already told us.
Where's Jimmy G going? That. What about Goff? You know what? Rodgers to the Rams.
I think Jimmy G to the Green Bay. What's that?
Yeah, straight up trade. Rodgers for Goff.
Wow, and a bunch of picks.
You think Denver sticks with Locke?
He's from
Silly Cow. Or are they going to be looking for a veteran quarterback?
I want to see him with a year, like not a COVID year, not a 5-game season with a full year. So I think he's there next year. I think with what they've invested around him, I think he's got more of an opportunity to show himself, to prove himself than people give him credit for.
That was fun. Jeff Jadia, thank you so much.
What I could have, should have, would have.
Yeah. NFL free agency, offseason. Let's get like the NBA.
Hey. Horse is your man now.
Watch out for those kneecaps.
That is, well, wow.
Dorse.
Nate. Thank you so much, Jeff Jadia. We appreciate it.
Next week.
Let's go.
Super Bowl week from Kansas City.
That's right, baby. Virtual Super Bowl week. Right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.